If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Big news, everybody. Dan and I are playing London's O2 Arena.
Yes.
Well, not the whole arena.
I mean, not a lot of people realise that there's other bits of it. So if you just say the O2.
Fine. I'm happy with that.
It's not a lie, is it? So
that's true. Dan and I are playing the O2 Arena, London, our biggest gig yet at Cineworld. And you can be there.
This is the Just for Laughs Festival. It's happening on Sunday, the 5th of March. We've got some amazing guests. TBA. It's going to be good.
There's some amazing people on the lineup, including Graham Norton, Catherine Ryan, and we can't wait to see you at Just for Laughs Festival. So get your tickets right now. Go to gaynongay.com.
Yeah, it's in the afternoon of Sunday, the 5th of March. So if you're in London, come down. If you're not, come down to London. Or come up to London, sorry. Not everybody lives above London or in London.
You okay, Dan?
Some people live in Brighton.
You're right.
Quite a few of our listeners, in fact.
Are you okay?
Live in Brighton. Yeah, I'm cool.
Great. They know what they're doing.
I'm just not a London wanker.
Oh, are you not?
No.
Oh, I thought you were.
No.
Oh, that's so funny.
I've got one foot in the rest of the country.
Right. So relatable and real.
Yeah, exactly.
Visit gaynongay.com to get tickets, and we'll see you in 2023.
Coming up,
we need to talk about prevention, treatment, and cure. We stuck into prevention and treatment, and we neglected cure. And I think that is what I realized when I became the London patient.
A Gay and a Non-Gay is a podcast from James Barr and Dan Hudson. They're like a lovely little couple, except
Welcome
they're
to
not.
Welcome to the Podcast Festival. We are a gay and a non-gay.
Yes, we are.
Woo! So this is actually our first show back in London at the London Podcast Festival for like 3 years.
Yeah.
But we just did a show in Edinburgh together. And guys, we got a 4-star review. Can you believe that? No, but can you actually believe that?
Yeah.
And the review said, what did it say? It was really nice, actually.
It said, the camaraderie between the two of us is phenomenal.
And look at them. They were right, yeah. Weren't they?
Welcome to a gay and a non-gay.
So at Edinburgh Fringe, numbers across all shows were low. And I went to a show where in a 120 seat capacity venue.
This wasn't our show.
It wasn't our show. And I was the only one in the audience.
No way.
The performer said to me, do you mind if we don't do the show?
And you said, no, I'd like you to do it, please. But then loads of other people showed up, right?
Well, so two other people showed up and she was like, obviously I have to do the show because there's three.
Right.
I don't know where the limit is. If another person had turned up, would that...
I just think it was quite a difficult year this year. There was a lot of shows, not a lot of people.
Yeah.
It was quite an intense experience. I wasn't planning to talk about it, but I'm definitely suffering from a post-Fringe vibe. I just want to be at home, really.
You had a weight of a time at the Fringe.
I did have a really good time, but it's just so intense on your mental health.
What's the earliest time you went to bed?
Well, I could tell you the latest time I went to bed. That might be more interesting. 8 a.m. Guys, there's a lot of networking to do. Right, Dan, I think it's time we gave you a safe space in our podcast to talk about things you want to talk about. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's hard out here for people like Dan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I'm having a hard time being a straight white man in 2022. I'm sure there was one other person in the crowd that fits that description.
So we've done this feature a lot every time we do a live show. It's called Things Dan Can't Say, and it is a safe space for Dan to ask a gay person a question that he would not normally be allowed to answer. And it's just a good opportunity for us all to learn about each other.
Yes.
So previous examples we've had are...
One of the ones from Edinburgh was, why can't gay people commit to anything? Commit to a meeting or an event or something.
Like dinners, lunch, whatever. Like we cancel a lot, apparently. And the other thing that we talked about was, why do all gay men look at each other's dicks when they're in the toilet? Which we won't answer here because we don't have time.
I didn't say, why do they? I said,
Do they?
Oh, sorry, you did say do they. I've answered the question.
Big difference.
I've answered it in the question. So are you ready for things Dan can't say, everyone? You promise you won't cancel him? All right, let's do it. That's right, clap along. Here we go, it's time for my solo. You might just want to know why I don't like girls, I like guys. And well, for one night only, you can say what you like. Have you tried being bi? Do you like cum in your eye? Sure. For one night only, you can say what you like.
Things that Dan cannot say, things that Dan cannot say. He's on the wrong track, baby. Things that Dan cannot say, things that Dan cannot say, things that Dan cannot say. He's on the wrong track, baby. Things that Dan cannot say.
All right, Dan, what is today's things Dan can't say?
Been giving it a lot of thought, actually.
I'm kind of worried. I don't know if I should be worried.
Why do gay people have like multiple subscription services and not use any of them, or just use one or two? Why is that
a fair question?
All the gays in the front row are like, what an observation.
Okay. Yeah, we like our options. We like options. I mean, I do think I have quite a lot of subscription services.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, the ones that I know that you have,
okay.
Right? Netflix.
Yep.
I mean, standard. Disney Plus.
Yep.
Now TV.
Yep.
There's a Drag Race specific one, right?
Wow Plus.
Yeah.
Yep.
Amazon Prime.
OnlyFans.
Oh, yeah. I do have a subscription to an OnlyFans, actually.
Really? Who's,
yeah, I do. I was disappointed when I joined OnlyFans that you only subscribed to individual people and you spent quite a lot of money on that one person. But it was a guy. I don't know if the gays in the room will know him. I mean, mad love for this guy. He worked for the NHS and he was like, fuck this pay rise. I'm going to go and make loads of money on OnlyFans. So he's become this OnlyFans influencer and he's making like hundreds of thousands a month. How great is that? People are dying everywhere, but he's just wanking off. It's so great. What were you saying?
So did you thought it was like a Netflix of porn?
I think so. But right. Once you're in there anyway, I mean, it's hard to get out.
Okay, well.
I do have OnlyFans. Not me personally.
Paramount Plus, have you got that one?
I have, because Star Trek. The thing is, I know, so out, so off brand.
Is that your boyfriend's influence?
No, actually, that's all me. I do need to get rid of some, because it's such a waste of money, but I don't know which one to get rid of. Like, I don't know which one I like less.
You can start with Paramount Plus, I think. Can't you?
I like Star Trek, Dan.
But I'll get your Paramount Plus password, if that's all right, because Beavis and Butthead is on that, right? The new one.
Oh, God, is it? The straight man's nodding. Oh, quick. The organizer of the festival's walked in, everyone. Please act like you're having a great time.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I think that's probably why I have so many subscription services, because I can't decide which one to get rid of.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't think I've got one, Amazon Prime. And then
that's very non-gay, I feel.
Well, I use other people's logins.
And Amazon Prime is quite non-gay as subscriptions go.
I don't even have it for the TV. I have it so I can send
shit
to my house.
Yeah, no, we got that. Like, yeah, I understood that. Just like masking tape and no more nails and shit like that. What else you got?
Well, it's more like, I don't know, food and stuff.
Food?
Yeah.
On Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon Prime Food or whatever it's called.
Oh,
Amazon
really?
Fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, Amazon. I
know it's not good for the world. Like, I'm sort of acknowledging that.
It's okay. We're in your safe space.
FYI. But like,
say what you want. Don't boo him, please.
It's what? For the lube, yeah.
Do you order... Hold on. You order lube off Amazon?
No, I think Dan does.
I don't think he's seen lube, babe. Do you use lube in real life? Not I don't know how wet you're... Oh, God. Sorry, everyone. Sorry to the women in the room.
It's also quite a rank sort of substance, isn't it?
Okay, I need to... I'm so sorry, I have not educated this straight guy. No, it's not. What are you talking about?
It's just like greasy. I know it's not actual grease.
No, but there's
like
different types, aren't there? They're like wines. You can get different ones.
They're all... Yeah, but wine is wine, isn't it? Like, it's not... Wines don't deviate massively between them.
They do. Some are really, like, thick.
Yeah, but you know wine
some
is
wine. Some are, like, quite heavy. Some are more fruity. Some are more liquidy.
Right.
There's one called Gun Oil, which is fisting lube.
Right.
I haven't actually used that, but I'm aware it's quite thick. Have you used that? Have you seen... Our friend's here is looking at me. Yes, he has. That's quite a thick... Is that quite a gloopy one?
Yeah.
It was worth it. I love how you just butched yourself up. Yeah.
Distracted. I mean, the description of that sounds rank, doesn't it?
After three, just shout your favourite lube, because I can't remember the name of mine. 3, 2, 1. Someone said Tesco Value. Oh. There's not a Tesco Value lube, is there? I want to buy that. Oh my God, if I slept with a guy that had that, that would be real for me.
Well, times are tough.
Because you want a guy that's not trying to impress you. that's the key to finding secret happiness. It's someone that isn't trying to like impress you. So if they open the drawer and there's a Tesco lube, wow, every little helps. So that was Things Dan Can't Say.
Yeah. Now we're going to do this song again.
Things that Dan cannot say. He's on the wrong track, baby. Things that Dan cannot say.
Big up Dan for Things Dan Can't Say.
Yeah,
oh, sorry,
that's a good one, actually.
Your finger here.
It's now time to introduce our first guest.
They're a mess, but they make it funny. Their podcast was named Best Podcast of the Week in The Guardian this year. They've amassed millions of views on TikTok with amazing relatable bops, and they are two of my fave girlies. Give it up for Key and D!
Hello.
Hi, both of you. How are you?
Can we sit? Hi.
Now, we should start our chat with one of my favorite songs of yours. Can we do it? Is everyone ready to suck on my tits or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Hit it.
Line it up.
And Tasha said, sucking on my tits or whatever. Licking on my tits or whatever. Sucking on my tits or whatever. Licking on my tits or whatever. And we really need to know the logistics.
Did you find out the logistics? Have you met these people yet?
Oh my God, Coco and us are like,
no,
tired.
Are you actually?
I met her like absolutely hammered one night and maybe did ask her, but I can't remember. I was so hammered. We need to know the logistics though, don't we?
Yeah, we were more just like so intrigued because he was like, I just did it because I was really angry and upset. Yeah.
Right.
And the vision of him like sucking on a boob. But like out of anger, like, yeah.
We're I just feel like it was very childlike.
Yeah.
Very, very childlike.
Now, I don't know if you know, there aren't any gay people on Love Island, so I'm not sure the gays in the room have watched this infamous moment. Have you seen this Love Island clip? Not. Oh my God, they're shaking their head, these poor gay people. So this guy basically cheated on the girl he was seeing by sucking on someone else's tit
or whatever.
Whatever.
And it was wild. Have you had a guy do this? Is this a thing straight people do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love a good little sucking on a titty or whatever. Right. You know, I'm a woman. I love it.
Some girls have said to me they don't like it because it's like you're being breastfed.
Like you're breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a maternal thing. No.
I quite like it. And it's quite funny that you say that because I know a lot of friends that have had babies that won't breastfeed because they see their like breasts as like sexual objects and they don't want their babies to be on their breasts. So there is something in that. So maybe women don't like it because, again, the baby thing. I love it. I'm like, anyone,
well, nipples
it.
Are so sensitive. It's the clitoris of the boob.
Yeah.
It, you know.
Of the chest, yeah. No, I said that. I've never used that line before, but that is a great line.
The clitoris of the boob.
Just quick show of hands, because I think some people, either they're lying or they don't have any feeling in their tits, right? Because when I've like licked guys...
Yeah.
What's a guy's one called? Nipple.
It's a nipple.
Areola.
Areola.
It's still a nipple on a guy.
Some of them are like, oh no, I don't like it. So quick show of hands. Who likes their nipples being okay? Oh, so that is about half
of
them.
Oh my God, my mum's got two hands up in the air.
Your mum put two hands up.
That's both nipples.
That's both boobs at the same time. Mum.
She loves
it. Have you met Dan before?
For God's sake.
Dirty bitch. I love that.
Well, that is
quite an educational
it's a
evening
lot
already.
To take in. Straight to it.
That is a lot. When you started your TikTok, your Instagram songs, you were in lockdown, living together, and you called it the summer of No 69, which I'm obsessed with.
Yeah.
Did nothing happen at all during those lockdown months?
Oh my God,
months?
We were a house full of three girls and... The only action that we would get, like if the room, if you could hear a slight vibrating at a low frequency,
don't ask any questions.
Don't ask any, just keep walking. Do you know what I mean? It was all three rooms off the hallway.
Yeah, it was, I know, it was that like putting like three pillows on top of you, like, oh my God, could they hear it? Like, literally.
And Jay's like, the fish cakes are ready. I'm like, okay,
I was so desperate to have sex when we first, like, you know, when everything was like, you can eat your meat outside.
Yes.
I talked to a guy. I met him in the snow. And
in Primrose Hill, right?
In Primrose Hill.
And you had sushi in the snow.
Yeah, and then I met up with him again and I
is
definitely
sushi
had sex with
him. Sushi
a word
for sex or no?
No,
oh,
like
sorry.
Actual sushi. Like that's not something that I would want to eat in cold weather. Like
no,
in
I was
the
like,
open.
So where do you come from? And then I was like, okay, I've done one date now.
That's how desperate you were.
Yeah, I've done one date now. I can definitely have sex with him again. So then I had sex with him.
Nice. I had a friend that did a glory hole in lockdown and went to someone's house and they built like a glory hole out of Amazon boxes and then they stood behind it. It wasn't Dan, I imagine. So I think people were doing it just in inventive ways.
I mean, but ooh, that's very socially distant to glory hole. If that makes it very COVID safe, really.
But very intimate at the same time.
Yeah, very not at the same. As long as everyone's using hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
I feel like that would, is there a straight version of a glory hole?
Glory hole.
Well, I guess.
Do you use glory holes, Dan?
I don't.
What would that look like?
There's a certain kind of porn where there's a woman doing it.
Doing what?
Well, setting up a glory hole and loads of blokes are coming through.
Right, but there's not one.
But the glory hole is her hole? Is that what it is?
No, she just puts herself up against the glory hole.
So she's just sucking the dicks off.
I thought she was the glory hole.
She's just putting her tit in and sucking it off.
No. She's not doing that. Oh. She's doing exactly what
a gay would do.
Yeah.
Right. But
got you.
But there isn't one to give women pleasure unless they enjoy that, I suppose, is what we're getting at. Is that what you're saying? Gosh, straight sex.
I think that was
anyone else confused?
To quote Love Island, I think that would be a bit logistically difficult, wouldn't it?
I can't believe you just used their words against
you
us.
Just used
so you talk about icks a lot in your podcast. By the way, listen to it. It's amazing. What other icks do you have? Because I want to get into some icks tonight. I'd love to know what all of our icks are.
Oh, yeah. We did this in Edinburgh. We asked people. We had some great ones.
We need to write a book about all that. It was like so funny because we'd have a section of the show where we'd like open up the floor, I guess. It became a therapy session by the end of it because girls were like, I hate it when a guy lies on a sofa and the back of his hair goes flat and then he sits up and we're just like, girl, people don't
you need help. This one girl was like gluten intolerant. I was like, that's really mean. Like curly hair, sharpening a pencil. It's like, what if he's a graphic designer or an artist?
He's just cautious?
Yeah.
What if he's doing the crossword and doesn't really back himself? Yeah. Like that, needs to be some leeway. I was like, guys, you stand no chance in this world.
But our icks, my ick is a massive thing when a guy brings a guitar to a picnic. Like, you're not in your gap year, like, shut up.
Like on a date?
No, just to a picnic.
Just like a picnic with those friends. He's like, here he is with his fucking guitar.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, shut up.
I think mine is definitely those little inside toe socks that they wear inside. Oh, he's not. I'm sorry.
I was nearly wearing some.
But it's the really tiny ones that like.
What do you mean? Like trainers?
She's not, you know what I mean. And it's like they come out and it's like little twinklies.
Like trainer socks.
I know exactly what you mean.
But like
this? Is it like this?
Like no, they're fine. It's when they come at the toe cleavage, just there.
It is a sock that you'd wear with like a flat shoe that wear.
Yes.
It's a ballerina sock.
Like a boat shoe.
Yeah. That makes my fanny shrivel up.
I do wear some, but Dan, what's your ick?
Not like a funny one, really. I really hate it when people are like derogatory about like rock music.
Yes.
Or like wrestling or things that like they think they consider to be like uncool. Like,
so your ick is when people don't like things you like.
Yeah. No, not really, because like I'm not that arsed about like wrestling, for example, but I do think there's quite a snide attitude.
Are you wearing it? No, I thought that said WWE.
No. Great band.
Do you know what I mean? Like
I'm just trying to win points with you, Dan. So
well, it's just like not really cool to be like slagging something off. Like we all have our things that we enjoy and just stop it.
I let me rephrase it. It's more like things that one considers one should have grown out of. That's what really, and people say it to me all the time in like a derogatory way about other people.
That's
and I'm like, I just think that's really shitty.
I do that.
Do you do that?
Yeah, okay, I do that with my boyfriend because he plays Call of Duty.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, you should have grown out of
it's
that.
It's a bit different if he's like not going to work because he's playing Call of Duty.
No, he goes to work.
Right.
But then he comes home and plays Call of Duty. That's even worse.
I love Call of Duty.
I hate it. Absolutely back off.
It's such a
the headset, babe. No. It's so unattractive.
And playing against like 7-year-olds. Like, I used to have an ex-boyfriend that used to, I was like, who are you playing against? Some 10-year-olds.
Literally from terrifying.
Like, get a grip.
Do you know what I mean? From like, you know, Russia or Tunbridge
Wells. Tunbridge
Wells. It's such a Bognor Regis on the fucking Call of Duty.
I get this. So I skateboard, like I put it on my Instagram sometimes and like Pete Witts was messaging me going, grow up.
Oh, that's so rude.
You grow up.
Yeah, really good skateboarding comeback. Is a good example, actually. That's what's wrong with... My friend has just started to learn to skateboard, and she's like 33. And what's the problem? People are just jealous because they want to learn to skateboard.
Yeah, but people are like, grow up, like what you're doing. But like, I'm skating around being like, I'm cool. So back off.
Yeah.
Skate right over you.
100%. Can you do any tricks or are you just rolling around?
I just go really, really fast.
Okay.
And it's very good.
What are yours?
Thank you.
Oh my god, James, babe, best for last.
I actually, I don't know if I have any icks. I think I'm just open to everybody. But
liar,
that is bullshit.
I don't like
people being on time. You don't like that.
I know it's wrong, but I don't like a lot of hair. I don't like a lot of bush. And I know people should be allowed to do whatever they want, and I'm okay with that, but I don't want it in my face, so I suppose that's probably
it's like your personal pref. You don't want to floss at the same time.
Exactly. No. Right. Thank you.
You've got to have a trim. Like, let's just trim it. Yeah. I mean, I like a bushy vibe.
I don't mind the centimeter, but anything more? It's too much. Did someone just shame me for that?
Well, you're body
maybe shaming. maybe half a centimeter. I'm not shaming anybody. Maybe half a centimeter. I don't know. But anyway, that's probably mine. Do we have any self-icks, things we don't like about ourselves? Because I have.
Oh, babe, is a can of worms. Yeah. You don't want to open up.
We're going to therapy immediately after Fringe.
Dan,
like
do you have any?
No.
Nothing great. No, I thought not. No. I thought that question really was just for him.
A gay and a non-gay. Two unlikely friends take on the world.
I always think that girls, allies, are very much part of the queer community, to be honest. Like, I do feel like you are the same. You're marginalised just as much as gay people are, LGBTQ plus people, right? Do you feel that too?
1,000,000%. The gays are our people. I adore gay men. The majority of my friends are gay men and they make my life way happier. And I just surround myself by that energy constantly. And I am actually really fucking thankful for the gays. And I actually cannot even imagine what my life would be without gay men specifically. It would be a sad little life.
A sad little life, Jane.
Absolutely. If I deleted all the gays out of my life, I don't actually think I'd talk to many men.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dan. No, I love it's straight. Right. Like, I'm in a relationship, but other than Fred, I don't think I'd really speak to many people.
I actually am so fucking single because I only hang out with gay men. I'm on a night out and there's some fit guys over there. I don't care about you, hun. I'm dancing to Lady Gaga with my gays. You can wait.
I guess you know with gay blokes that they're not going to try and do anything inappropriate, whereas you can't really trust straight men. No, that's...
I know what you mean. It's like when I go to the ladies' pond at Hampstead Heath and I just feel immediately at ease.
It's
the same kind of feeling.
A certain kind of straight men, I should say. Because like, I obviously have lots of friends who are straight and female. I'm not trying to sleep with them. As are lots of my friends, but like there's a certain kind of straight man who you wouldn't really want to.
Well, I guess there's always that thing, isn't it? With any sort of like relationship, like your friend, you're really close with a straight guy and you think that it's like really platonic, and then one day you'll just be caught off guard.
They do the lean in,
and then you're like, your tongue's down your throat and not a tube stays, and you're like, what the fuck is going on?
That feels like a specific thing that's
happened. Yeah, that actually happened.
That was way too specific. Suddenly I'm at Holborn at 9:38 on a Monday, and I'm like,
hypothetically, you know.
But I can think of a couple of straight males in my life that I don't worry about that with. And we are very, very platonic. But with a gay man, you just like, when I get my breasts out, they're like, absolutely not. I'm disgusted. Like,
disgusting. I'm put like, it
yeah,
away.
That's fine.
These are my people.
Yeah, like, sorry.
But they also make you feel fucking amazing at the same time. They're like, disgusting, but you are
but you're
God.
Amazing.
It's because I think we're the same. I think we've also suffered at the hand of like straight white men. And I think that makes us so connected. And so I'm very fiercely protective of my female friends, straight or otherwise. And I feel like we are the same community. Even if straight women aren't part of that, I think they should be.
Yeah. There's definitely a kinship for sure, 100%.
Yeah.
In the trenches.
I'm here fucking for it, babe.
I love that you're in the trenches.
Fabulous in those trenches.
Make sure you listen to Key and D's podcast. Check them out on Instagram. Where can we find you on Instagram and TikTok?
At Key and D.
You have to think about that for
and
a minute.
And in TikTok, at Key and D Show.
Yeah.
We couldn't get the handle on TikTok.
No way.
Yeah, we need that back, whoever you are.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, give it back.
Stop stealing our identity.
Thanks so much for joining us. Please give it up for Key and D, Diana Vickers, and
Kiara
Stevens.
So
and Kiara Stevens' mum.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If you've listened to our podcast before, I think this person is possibly the most interesting person that we've ever, ever, ever spoken to. We spoke to him a couple of years ago during lockdown. Before we introduce him, we're just going to play a clip, I think, of that episode.
with COVID-19 not being the same thing at all, but being a similar kind of moment for the world, I think your story is even more special because it shows you that there is hope. Do you have a message for people, or for everyone, the world right now?
Please don't give up on hope. We are all in this together, and we have to work together as a community, help each other, support each other, and we will get through in years to come thinking how amazing how everyone get together and help each other. I think humankind, kindness is what will come from this pandemic. Please don't give up on hope.
Please welcome Adam, the London Patient.
Hi, oh my God, it's so good to meet you in real life.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thank you for having me, guys.
We met you on Zoom in the pandemic. What horrific days.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was crazy. I have to be isolated at home.
We need to go way back.
Yeah.
Way, way back. We need to explain why you're called the London Patient.
Yeah, so I'm the London Patient, Adam Castellaggio, and the second man to be cured of HIV.
The second person in the world to be cured of HIV.
Yeah, it's a big shoes to be in. I mean, people ask me, how's it feels? And I say, I'm still the same. I just happen to be cured. But nothing changed. People around me changed. The perception of people around me had changed. People look at me like, oh, how is life? How are things? Still the same. I wake up the same. But if people's reaction towards me changed, things have become.
That's so annoying to me that people would change their opinion of you as a person previously and after, depending on where you were at with HIV. Like, that's disgusting.
I think more people start to know who you are. I think I went to tell people my story. I think that's kind of different. When people find out about my story, they were like, oh, wow, it's happening. But a lot of people still today, people still call me and say, are you sure you're cured? And say, well, yeah. But it's still people asking me.
So, okay, so you had HIV and then you were cured of HIV. Yeah. And then the people in your HIV community no longer wanted to associate with you?
No, I think they told me, you know, softly, oh, Adam, but I cannot work with you anymore because you cure. And I go like, wow, that is crazy for me. I have to understand the new reality of being cured and life after HIV. So it's quite different. So what I try to do now is to getting people to understand it's life after. Let's work together.
I can already hear the audience like reacting to the things you're saying. It's like a super powerful conversation, and we have loads of questions that we need to like get into. Should we go back to the HIV diagnosis, Dan?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, how did you feel when you first got told you had HIV?
Well, it was in the noughties, so it went to 2003 when I was diagnosed. The doctors told me, oh, Alan, you are HIV positive and you got 10 years max to live. So enjoy it, just 10 years. So have fun. I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to have fun? Now you're telling me I'm going to die in 10 years. But that wasn't the notice. They told you you have 10, and if you're lucky, you get 20. So enjoy it.
And then shortly after that, a little bit of time after that?
Yeah, things changed. I think people went to medication, things changed. The retroviral medication changed. So it's been a process. When I was diagnosed with cancer in 2011, 2012.
So you had HIV, but you were now on good treatment.
I started treatment just nearly, almost when I started my cancer treatment. Right. Because in the early notice, when you were diagnosed with HIV, they told you you can live without any medication. And that changed over the years. By 2010, everybody had to be on medication. To become now like you equals you, that became quite early in time. So now we are you equal you, but the time I was diagnosed, that was not. You had HIV, live without medication. Let's see how long you can live without medication. That was
That's so recently. It just shows how far we've come in such a short space of time. So tell us about the cancer. Awful thing to say, forgive me. The cancer, not a blessing, but a blessing in disguise because it then led to this cure, if you can call it a blessing.
Well, you can think of that. I was in New York when that happened, as you do. And then I had a nurse calling me and say to me, Alan, can you come to the clinic? We have to speak to you. And I go, listen, I'm on holiday and I come in 10 days, so I am not going to ruin my holiday. Tell me now. I said, I can't live 10 days without that question. I said, I think you might have cancer. And okay, but we don't know yet. We need to do more checks. But you know, guys, when somebody tells you got cancer, you got cancer. So that's no way back. And then I see that with my friends. I told them I got cancer. And my friend just dropped everything on the table like, what? I said, yeah, I got cancer. And my life changed. came back to the UK. Came back as time my journey, still just Adam with cancer. And I have to deal with my HIV. People don't talk about it, about people with cancer. If you have, you go HIV, you are 3 times more likely to get cancer. Any type of cancer, you are 3 times more likely. And nobody talk about it. People thinking, oh, I got cancer. And people call me, oh, you got the gay AIDS disease, you got the gay cancer. I said, no, I don't got the gay cancer. I just got cancer, full stop. But I realized you go 3 times more likely to get cancer. And that's what I got, lymphoma. And some people go leukemia, some people get different type of blood cancer diseases, but that's what I got. But you can get any cancer, guys. No matter how healthy you are, no matter your medication, it can happen to anybody. We need to normalize that.
And is that because of immune weakened immune system or something?
Yeah, because you're immune suppressed, yeah.
I think one of the things that stuck with me last time we spoke to you was that people treated you completely differently when you got the cancer diagnosis as to when you had
HIV. Yeah. I mean, when I have HIV, I told very few people in the beginning. Some people even to this day, they haven't spoke to me since they're told I'm HIV. Then they called me back when I got cured and said, no, bye-bye to you. But yeah, so yeah.
So you got a phone call from your doctor then in 2015 saying that they'd found a match for your bone marrow donation.
Yeah.
With a German donor.
Yeah.
Who carries a critical Delta 32
mutation.
I'm obviously reading that so that I don't get it wrong.
It's quite complicated.
What does that mean in like the most simple terms?
It's a superhuman. So the 1% of the population that is super immune system. But the thing is, you have to be descendant of the superhuman, that's what they're called, superhuman immune system.
This
you
is
have
the 32, to be descendant. This is the Delta 32 mutation. That's like superhuman mutation.
Yeah, it's 1% of the population. Yeah.
Wow, okay. And this person having that was a bone marrow match for you.
Yeah.
When they tried to then cure your cancer, they used this specific person's bone marrow, which just happened to also be able to fend off HIV.
Yeah, I think because the mutation allows you to kill both the HIV and the cancer at the same time. But you have to have a mutation. That's what allows to kill both. It's highly risky, quite complicated, but the thing is, if it's genetic makeup, you have to be matched for that 1%. If you're not a match for that type of mutation, it's impossible to do it, no matter how much you want it. Even the person want to donate, it has to be the match. Now we are 5 people in the world, but we all come from Northern European descendants, despite I look round. And my doctor told me when he called me back, I said, oh, Adam, I'm sorry, do you like a Cambridge chocolate? You brown from the outside, white for the inside. I don't have a Northern European appearance, but my descendants from my father and mother are Northern, so are Dutch, Spanish. So that's why I have that this mixed look.
So there's 3 people now in the world, but one of them is...
No, we're 5 now. We're 5.
There's 5. You're on 5. Amazing.
Yeah.
But you were friends with the Berlin patient.
Yeah.
Who was the first person in the world. The one that went before you.
He told me everything I need to kind of understand about it. He told me about the different difficulties about being cured of HIV and how many people told them out of another club anymore. So he already warned me that.
Oh, I mean, people did that to him as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
He used to go to a gym. It was HIV gym for people who were living with HIV. And because it was cured, they told him your membership is not going to be renewed. And I thought, wow. Yeah. When he told me that, I thought, like, that's what you're going to get, Adam, in the future. So be prepared. When I got that type of messages and reaction for people, you went, wow. It warned me about it, but yeah.
Do you understand where they're coming from on a sort of empathetic level? Because I always do this. I try and understand why people are being horrible. And I suppose, like, is it their pain that's causing them to behave like that?
I don't know. Probably ignorant sometimes. Some people, they're scared of the change. And I think that's what a lot of people are scared of changing.
I guess, do you think they're jealous is what I'm saying?
I don't know. Maybe they are. But I just thinking, I try to work hard with my experience and try to work with researchers. Try to find a cure for everybody. That's what we try. And I work with multiple organizations. Try to see what is happening. So yeah, it's jealousy and ignorance as well.
Is it on some level, and don't cancel me while I try and work this out in my head.
But we will.
Is it on some level because you're the exception to the rule and you know, you're one of now only a handful of people that have been cured? Do they think on some level you're giving a false impression that other people are...
No, I think, yeah, I think it's part
of
that.
Do you know what I
mean? Yeah, I know what you mean. But sometimes people thinking, because it's not feasible for anybody else.
Yeah.
And it's very complicated and expensive and it takes years to go there. They don't want to give hope to people like that. But at the same time, give it that perception. Don't worry about it. It's cured, but don't worry about it. Continue with your medication. Forget about them. So it's kind of like they cancel you quite quickly, right, which is the way it is. But I try to change the narrative.
Well, you're obviously still very much a part of the HIV community in your heart and forever, and you want to do as much as you can. And I think that's what's important to remember here and focus on. We've obviously talked about the Berlin patient. The Berlin patient has sadly passed away now. Mm-hmm. Did you get to meet in real life?
No, unfortunately, I couldn't. Because of COVID, the time I was going to die, I went to travel because the US didn't give you compassion ground visas to travel. I was not a relative of him, so I could not get a visa. I had the hotel, the flight, the doctors, everything, but I could not travel to see him. So it was kind of sad. And he died really at a time when I thought I was want to meet him in person. We were going to go on a mercy journey, but now he gave me the last time when we spoke, he said to me, Adam, now I give you the torch, and now you continue the legacy, my legacy, and enhance it.
The New York patient is currently anonymous.
Yeah, so I'm going to hopefully try to meet. We try to meet privately. I think I know the Dusseldorf, so I think it's important to meet privately.
Yeah.
Without a spotlight, because I think people want to know you, and I think it's important to meet private, to know who you are. And most of the time, we're kind of similar. I mean, the Dusseldorf patient, the Berlin patient, and myself, kind of similar. And taste and things, so it's kind of like a brotherhood. We're kind of brothers, so we call ourselves brothers. So.
And now you've got a sister.
Yeah, we've got a sister. Hopefully I meet her when I'm in New York.
If anyone's got any questions for Adam, please put your hand up and we'll come around and shout.
Hi, I was just wondering, with what you said a moment ago about it being a human disease and not a gay disease, do you think the same thing's happening with monkeypox, and that, you know, it's mainly being reported among the gay community? And
I'm working with a lot of people that have said the same. We think if we go back to the narrative on the 80s about the monkeypox, it's been difficult to kind of change that narrative because people went back to that mindset of the 90s. I think it was really bad. But yeah, I think we need to change. I think people have taken notice of that.
So many things I want to ask, but you talked a little bit about immediately after being cured, you sort of fell out of the HIV club, I guess.
Yeah.
But obviously those people, probably the aspects of society that didn't accept you while you had HIV, did they sort of let you back in, or was it quite a lonely place to be?
Yeah, it was a very lonely place to be, and I thought I was going to be welcomed with open arms, and I wasn't. And that was shocking for me because I thought, we all don't want to get cured of HIV. Apparently not. And that was a big lesson for me to understand. Some people don't think to be want to be cured. And I think I get used to it and to understand. And say, okay, fine. If you don't want to be cured, it's your prerogative. But I said to somebody, which I met recently, a very well-educated person now in this country, and he asked me, but I don't care to be cured. I'm in treatment. So I don't care to be cured. And I just pause. And I say to him, I just want to slap him. I say, what the hell are you talking about? You will not say that you got cancer. You don't tell me you want to live with chemotherapy for the rest of your life. And that mindset we need to change. We want to find a cure. Because you want to be cured if you got cancer, if you got diabetes, you have blood pressure. If you have a disease, you want to be cured. And people seem to find it easy just to be in medication. I understand the difficulties to find a cure. It had took, it's 40 years, guy, and it's only 5 people to be cured. It had taken a long time. But we cannot give up on that hope. We are too used to now to live in treatment, but we need to talk about prevention, treatment, and cure. We stuck into prevention and treatment, and we neglected cure. And I think that is what I realized when I became the London patient.
What's the best conversation you've had with someone who kind of, you know, was alive in the 80s and there was just no hope at that time? And then what reaction have you got from kind of the older community that just...
You know, one of the best reactions I had, it was one of my doctors, actually, because he was a trainee in the 80s and he was a Mortimer Market. So he started the clinic. So he threw the first patient with HIV. He told me in a conversation privately, said to me, Adam, I went for a circle. I'm waiting to see the first patient in this clinic to be HIV. And now I've managed to get the cure. I think from him, he was crying. He's one of the doctors, he's a professor. And to cry, because he was a trainee doctor and he started in the 80s, and now seeing a cure, he say, I never thought this was going to happen. And we start crying because it meant so much to him. And I realized the effort people have made, all the doctors and clinicians, the effort and the suffering he has felt through the years, to find it, to see the people who are dying in front of him just with no reason because he didn't know, to find a cure 40 years later. That was special for me.
Wow, your questions are amazing. Any other questions from you?
Thank you so much for sharing our story. It just seemed that when you were HIV positive, there was a sense of community and connection. And when you were no longer positive, you know, all that was gone, which basically would suggest that the gay community in the first place, there's fundamentally, there's something quite broken about that dynamic. So what advice would you give to the gay guys in London and worldwide to really promote that connection?
I think open your mind. So stop thinking about only treatment. Think about you can be cured too. I didn't think I was going to be cured, but I in my lifetime, but to be honest, because that's what everybody tells you. So you're not going to, it's an incurable disease. And it was. For the last 10 years, it hasn't been like that. But that was my reality. Like, change your attitude. Change that mindset. Be open to the different things. I think that is what I try to do. And I want to do that by, I'm a chef. So I try to make people say, let's try to eat different food. Let's try to make different directions and people to open up to different things. And it's difficult. Trust me, it's difficult. But I think it's open up. Open up to the changes. Because life goes beyond that. So just embrace the change.
I guess it's hard because it's not available to 70-something million people, right?
Yeah.
So it can feel quite difficult to try and hold on to that belief because really you're just trying to accept your now. And so I understand where that resistance to think about a cure can come from because you're fighting so hard to survive in your existence right in the second, and the treatment is so amazing and you can live a healthier life than someone that's not got it. I'm saying this flippantly, but someone that doesn't have HIV. So actually, I do understand why people don't want to think about a cure.
Yeah, I think because a lot of people, the mindset is it's impossible cure and it's very difficult. And I'm working with different organizations and different researchers around the world, and they're getting closer and closer to get that. So I'm working in an organization called Global Gene Therapy Initiative. So we're working around the world with multiple researchers, and the news they get are really promising. But the thing is, we cannot show all that to the world yet, but the progress is happening. And then they want to meet the voice of that, because all the scientific community, they find it difficult to talk, because when somebody starts talking all the charts and medication and scientific, you go, you switch off. So they want me to be the voice and tell the people, simple, this is A, B, and C.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, but it's pressure, but I'm willing to take it. I took that when I decided to be the London paper.
I think another thing as a gay man, and I'm speaking for myself, but if you relate, then great. But we want to suffer sometimes. Like, we want to live in our trauma because it's what's familiar to us. And so it's difficult to change that.
Embrace the change.
Yeah. It is difficult to think that we deserve more than what we have. It's similar to people I know that are older gays who were like, I don't want gay marriage. That's going to ruin being gay for me. Which is an offensive thing to say, but I sort of understand where it was coming from. And I hope, I suppose, one day, and this is what you're saying,
we'll get to a point where we
will have that cure.
I mean, I'm going to go into symposium in California about the old survivors, people are in the 60s, the 70s with HIV. So I'm kind of helping them how to relate to the changes, to thinking, okay, it's possible to find a cure. And I wanted to. So it takes time. It takes time for the change. But yeah, that's the way. It takes time, but it will get there. So don't give up.
And I know you said in our podcast too before when we chatted to you that you feel the pressure of all the people that we've lost that have come before us in the 80s and beyond that you're doing this for them in some way too.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have messaged me, and I remember specifically when the lady called me and say, hi, I just want to say to you, congratulations, for you being cured. I lost my brother in the hospital bed, and the only thing he told me, please, sister, find a cure. That was like, for me, like, if I can make changes. He said, it can make change for one person. And I made her, she was crying on the phone, saying to me, I can't believe it. I'm talking to somebody, it's cure. I waited in the 80s to this. That gave me, empowers me to help others. I think that's what I'm trying to do. And try to work with many people around the world, as many as I can.
Does it ever get too much, all the pressure? And do you ever think, I'm speaking for all these people? And does it ever get to you?
Yeah, time to time. I think when I get to the point when I'm thinking, oh my God, what the hell am I doing? But I'm thinking, embrace and say, Alan, you know who you are, that message you have to give hope for the 40 million people who have died with HIV in the last 40 years. I think you have to give hope to the people living with HIV, because people think in this country, we are lucky. We have PrEP, or we can become E equals U. But half of the world doesn't have that opportunity. People in the developing world, in the low and middle income countries, they embrace me more than in the richest countries, because they're too used to a PrEP, they're too used to a medication, so they don't see the disease as deadly when other countries in the world see it. And when I see people, kids, they are 8 years old, and they say, oh, you cure, and they hug me, and I'm just like, wow. That's when I'm thinking what I'm doing is good, because if I can make happy that kid, I want to be you. I want one day want to be you. Yes, you will be one day.
Ooh, some of that was difficult to listen to, but inspiring, incredible, and amazing. Please give a huge round of applause for Adam.
Thank you.
I think there's going to be a lot of people wanting to embrace Adam after the show.
Thank you so much for coming to Again and On Gay tonight at the London Podcast Festival. Have you had a good time? Okay, we've loved being with you.
Podcast comes out every week, every Wednesday at Gay and On Gay on socials. Thank you, James. Thank you, Adam.
Give it up for Adam and Key and D earlier tonight as well. Woo! Good night.
Thanks for listening, babes. Do the admin and support Gay and On Gay. Visit gaynongay.com/donate.